beautiful morning. Can we give them a round of applause for just a beautiful... I got to hear this during practice, and I got goosebumps then. They did it twice. I got goosebumps twice, and then I got goosebumps during this time. What a beautiful moment of worship this morning and of joy. That's what Easter is a day of joy. I want to lift my voice with whichever kid it was over here that just yelled, yay, at one point this morning. I don't know who it was, but I agree with them. Yay, this is that kind of morning. This is a day where we stand kind of metaphorically at the empty tomb of Jesus. The tomb that was filled with his body after his death. And we declare that that grave is empty. That Jesus Christ is risen. This is a day of standing at that place in amazement and in wonder at all that God has done. This is a day of awe. And I know that most of us realize that this isn't something we're just supposed to feel on Easter or just on Sundays, right? This is something we're supposed to be feeling every day. The amazement of who God is and what he's doing, the wonder at that on a daily basis. But in our busy world, with our distractions, it's often hard for us to do that. And so I want to invite you back next Sunday. We're going to be starting a new sermon series that we're calling In Awe, Embracing a Life of Holy Wonder. And we're going to talk about just that. What does it look like on a daily basis to stand in awe of who God is and what he's doing and to let that impact our lives? So would love for you to come back and be part of that sermon series as we kick that off next week. I met Miss Velma when I was a young preaching student in Abilene, Texas. There were these little towns around Abilene that always needed somebody to come preach. And so I would go preach on weekends at a bunch of little churches. And one of the smallest ones I went to on a regular basis is where I met Velma. Velma existed on the second row of this little country church. I say she existed there because I don't think I ever saw her come in or go out. She just kind of appeared. You would turn around and there would be Velma. You go, okay, we can start now. Velma's here. Velma was very small and she was very old. And she didn't mind talking about either one of those things. It didn't bother her at all. She loved everybody. Everybody was drawn to that. She told me one time, she said, Jason, I love all of God's creatures, but when I get to heaven, he's going to have to explain fire ants to me. And I thought, yeah, Velma, me too. Me too. There was an aura about Velma. People were drawn to her because she exuded joy and love and wisdom and peace. It was kind of funny to watch what people would do. They'd come in the back of this little church. They'd make their way over to the second row, kind of pay their respects, have their conversation with Miss Velma, then go find their seats. And when that was done, I knew we could start. Right? People wanted to be around her because she offered them something. And I would watch her and I would think, man, I wish I could be like that. I want to be that person that people are drawn to because I just have this air of joy and peace about me. And I bet if my life was fairly easy, like hers is, that I could do that. If I lived out in the country in the middle of nowhere and there weren't a lot of people, a lot of distractions around me, and all I had was time to read my Bible and say my prayers, I bet I could be like that. But my life is full of distractions and it's full of pressures. All these things that I'm having to deal with. Remember, I was 21 years old. Some people have lived at 21. I hadn't. But somehow I'm having this thought, right? And I look back on that with embarrassment. That I could think that this woman's life was any easier than mine is just silly. But the way I could get there in my head was I had never stopped to ask the question, what's her story? What's Velma's story? What is it that in her life and her experiences that have made her into who she is and what's driving her? I've come to realize as I've gotten older that that's a really important question that we neglect a lot when we meet people in our lives, to ask the question, what's their story and to actually be curious enough to find out. To find out who they are and why they are who they are and what drives them, what their hopes and desires are. And actually, I think we'd be better off if we asked that question about ourselves more often. What's my story? Who am I? What's not just my history. When I say story, I do mean history. What are the events and the experiences that have led me to this place? But I also mean more than that. I mean, what's the thing that drives me when I wake up in the morning? What's the story that I live out of, whether I know it or not? Because all of us do this. We live out of a story or a set of stories. And those stories, they shape how we interact with the world around us. We kind of have a basic sense of this, right? In fact, we have a shorthand for this. We'll talk about, oh, she's a middle child. That's why she does what she does, right? So her story is that she's a middle child and that shapes her behavior. Oh, he's an Enneagram 8. That's why he does what he does, right? We have these kind of simplified ways of talking about it. Most of those are overly simplified, I think. Our stories are more complicated than that, but there's some common ones that we see a lot. Maybe you're a person who sees yourself as an underdog. Maybe you see yourself as a leader. Maybe you're an artist, an entrepreneur. Maybe you have stories in your life of what it looks like to be successful, and that's what drives your decisions. For a lot of us, maybe you have stories in your life that what's important is to be seen as a good, moral person, that everybody around you knows that you're a good person. And so that shapes what you do. And there's nobler stories even too, like wanting to be people that are servants and helpers. That's a story we can do. Some of us are survivors. Some of us are victims. There's story after story. I could go on with the list. And these stories are important because they get us through large portions of our life. They help shape how we kind of move through the world. But there comes a time when those stories start to fail us. Those stories that have granted us identity and purpose and fulfillment stop doing it. And a lot of times that happens when we face struggle and suffering and loss in our lives. That's where I see that most often. We need a more resilient story. I don't know where you are in your life. Some of you may be at the place where the ground is kind of shifting beneath your feet, that the foundational stories that you've told yourself seem to be kind of filtering away underneath you, that you're questioning a lot of stuff. Some of you may be even past that. You may be even in kind of moments of despair and sadness right now. It's to you especially that I want to say this morning, Happy Easter. Jesus Christ is risen from the dead. This is the day of all days that we as Christians, with Christians all over the world, proclaim to each other and to anybody else who has ears to hear that we have a story that is resilient enough, that's strong enough to carry us through the hardest times of life. The story of Jesus Christ, of his ministry, of his death and of his resurrection, that his story gives us hope that carries us through these times. And I hope that you've heard that story this morning. I hope that you heard it in the video. I hope that you heard it in the McSpaddens as they shared it this morning. I hope you've heard it in the songs that we've sung. But I also want us to hear it today from one of Jesus's disciples, from the Apostle Peter. So if you have your Bibles, open to 1 Peter chapter 1. In the New Testament of the Bible, we have two letters that are attributed to Peter. They're cleverly called 1 and 2 Peter. We're going to be in 1 Peter. In this one, Peter is writing to a group of Christians who are going through some really hard stuff. We don't know the full extent of it, but they're going through times of suffering. And Peter knows that he needs to write to them to remind them that they have a story that will carry them through this. He seems a little nervous that if they're not reminded of that, that there's a chance they may kind of drift away or fall into apathy or maybe even despair. And so he wants to write to them, and this is how he kicks it off. In verse 3 of 1 Peter chapter 1, he says, "All praise to God, the Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. It is by his great mercy that we have been born again, because God raised Jesus Christ from the dead." So he kicks right into the story. He's reminding them, here's your story. Jesus Christ was raised from the dead, and because of that, you have a chance at new life, to be born again. You can live a different way. This is your story. Thank God for his mercy in doing that. Then he keeps going. He says, "Now we live with great expectation, and we have a priceless inheritance, an inheritance that is kept in heaven for you, pure and undefiled, beyond the reach of change and decay. And through your faith, God is protecting you by his power until you receive the salvation which is ready to be revealed on the last day for all to see." You have a story that cannot be shaken. You have a story that will not decay, will not slide out from under your feet. You have a story that's waiting for you. You have a story from God. That's what he's trying to tell them. So hold on, because you have this deep, deep story that's going to carry you right now. And then he's going to say one more thing here that I want to show you. Beautiful words. Hard words, though. He says, "So be truly glad. There is wonderful joy ahead, even though you must endure many trials for a little while." I love that phrase. There's wonderful joy ahead. It reminds me of when I was teaching my daughters how to ride their bikes, right? When we start riding a bike, your tendency is to try to look down at the area right around you, right? And you could do that for a little while, but pretty soon you're going to lose your balance and you're going to run into something. And so with the kids, you know, you kind of pull their chin up and you point to the horizon and you say, "Hey, keep your eyes that way," and that'll help you keep your balance. That's what Peter's doing. He's lifting their chin and he's pointing to the future and he's saying, "There is great joy ahead, I promise. Hold on." And if you keep your eyes fixed on that, that'll help you keep your balance in this. But Peter doesn't believe that their hope is just in the future, that their story is just for the future. He knows that the story of the resurrection changes the way that they should live right now. And so he's going to address that too. So if you skip down in chapter 1 to verse 21, he reminds them of the story again. He says, "Through Christ you have come to trust in God, and you have placed your faith and hope in God, because he raised Christ from the dead and gave him great glory." So he reiterates it, and then he says this: "You were cleansed from your sins when you obeyed the truth. So now you must show sincere love to each other as brothers and sisters. Love each other deeply with all your heart." What was true for the people that Peter is writing to is still true for us. We have a story because of Jesus, who died and was resurrected, who went through the worst pain imaginable and then was resurrected, who overcame death and sin in this world. Because of that, we have a story that we can live into, or we can too. He's freed us from our sin, and he's given us a chance to live the kind of life that he modeled for us in the cross, a life of sacrificial love. So Peter says, love each other deeply. We're called to live that story of Jesus' love towards each other. And what you find in the story of the resurrection is that it transforms us into those kinds of people. In the resurrection of Christ, we find a story that is just full of hope and resilience and love. It's our story. We are people of that new story who can live into that, whose lives right now are changed because of the hope that we have for the future. And as we're shaped by that story, we start to find certain things happen. We start to exude joy and love and peace and wisdom, just like Miss Velma. Over the years, I got to know Miss Velma's story. And indeed, her life had not been easy. She had lived in that area all her life. She had never married or had kids, but she and her sister had raised their brother who had Down syndrome. He lived a good, long life by their care. She had faced some incredibly hard times of suffering and loss and pain and loneliness. And she had moments where she could have slipped into despair, but Velma, somewhere along the way, had embraced the Easter story. She'd embraced the resurrection story. She believed with all her heart that Jesus had come, that he had was crucified on the cross, and he was raised from the dead, and because of that, she had hope. Hope for something beyond her death, but also hope that changed the way she lived right now. And what people were drawn to was that love that she had for them. Those conversations before church, those were more than just, how you doing, Miss Velma? Those were, hey, I'm praying for you. Hey, what's going on in your life? Those were deeper conversations. And I found out over the years that her love went far beyond that little dot on the map. Actually, it's not even on the map. I mean, that little place in West Texas. There were people all over the world that have been impacted by Miss Velma because of her love for missions and her love for other people. She and I shared a deep, deep connection to a ministry in Denver to homeless young people there. And when I would see Velma, she would say, hey, Jason, how are the kids? Well, I didn't have any kids at the time, so I knew she wasn't talking about that. She was asking me, what are you hearing about the homeless young people in Denver? What's God doing there? How's it going? And I would tell her whatever stories I'd heard. Till the day she died, she prayed every day for those kids, most of whom she had never met. She prayed for those people who were ministering to them. Miss Velma's life was not easy. But she accepted a story that not only was able to carry her through hard times in her life, but was able to allow her to walk alongside other people who were going through hard times. That's the story that we're called into. Church, would you please stand with me? I tell you the story of Velma today because it's deeply inspirational to me. It's not inspirational in the sense of, hey, I'm going to move out to the country and try to live a simple life away from the temptations of the city and all that kind of stuff. It's not that. It's the reminder that no matter who you are, no matter where you are, no matter what your background is, all of us have the chance, the opportunity to live the resurrection story, to live lives of sacrificial love connected to Jesus Christ, who is our hope, lives that look forward to something beyond death but also are changed in the here and now. No matter who you are, you have the chance at that kind of life. And my hope is today, for those of us who've been Christians for a while, that hearing these stories and these songs and that all of this kind of resurrects something in us. That it resurrects our hope in God's provision and mercy. That it resurrects our ability to endure in suffering and hardship. That it resurrects our love for each other. And if this is a new story for you, if you haven't accepted Christ, if you haven't begun to live into this story, we'd love to walk alongside with you in that journey too. In this a few moments, we're going to sing a song together and we're going to have a time of prayer. And if you would love for somebody to pray with you or somebody to talk to, we'll have some of our leaders back here by this Respond banner. I'd love for you to join us there as we sing this morning.